everybody, and welcome to another exciting night of 80s horror films. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I have with me as my co-host from the last week, from the last month, Julianne Prescott is here. How you doing, Julianne?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you. And then we also got Joe Gonzalez, who was here last week, it feels like it was last week, but it was last month. Please welcome Joe. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on again.
Yeah, no problem. And we got also our new co-host, who's going to hopefully be joining us for the rest of the times. Please welcome Rebecca Reinhardt. How are you doing, Rebecca?
Hey, Bob-a-ree-bob, everybody.
So today we've got an exciting one because I guess since it's still technically summer, it's great to have this sleepaway camp episode to be able to talk about it. I'm kind of sad that we didn't wait for Mutilator to go on a fall break, you know, and have it be fall that we did it at. But, you know, whatever. You live, you learn. However, I am really excited about this one. I think this is going to be a really fun episode. We've got probably a lot to talk about. So basically before that, here's some music for you. All right, welcome back, guys. Are you guys excited? Like, is this going to be like something you guys, like, how many times have you guys seen this film? I'll start with Rebecca because she's talked about it. She's seen it a lot. So
okay, so I think older than all four of you. I know I'm older than two of you, and I assume I'm older than Joe. But I rented this movie incessantly as an adolescent teenager. I actually saw Sleepaway Camp 2, like probably a good dozen times before I ever rented this one, for whatever reason. But I have seen this movie probably from age 13 to, I couldn't even count. I mean, like, it's one of those movies, like when I'm cleaning house, like I just put on for background noise. Like it's just sleep. Well, you guys can see, I've got this cool little Sleepaway Camp thing up here that friends made me. Julie, I think you saw me at that con. I have a Judy shirt. It says Becca on it, but it's a Judy shirt. Yeah. And I did see that. And then my friend Shannon had on her Camp Arawak shirt. And we got our pictures taken with Felissa and Catherine. And so that was like epic.
All right.
So yes. Number one fan. No.
I mean, if you had to guess, like how many times?
I mean, what's that, like 30 years? And I mean, I'll watch it at least like, oh God, I don't even want to count. Don't make me count. That's bad. I'm going to sound pitiful.
All right. Well, what about you, Julianne?
I have no idea as well to count either. I would say probably at least, 75. Oh, I'm just pulling a random number out of the air.
Yeah. So,
just a random number, but I actually saw Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3 before the first one. Just the box art for the second one was one of the first things I saw in a video store.
I think that's why I did too.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just the girl with the backpack and everything. And so I actually didn't see the first one first either.
Didn't the backpack have like the Jason mask
and the Freddy glove?
Yeah.
And a girl that wasn't anywhere near anybody who was in the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
As happened oftentimes in the 80s.
Well, it happens even now too, especially now, I think, even. But yeah, Joe, what about you? How many times have you probably seen it?
Oh shit. You know, I honestly feel embarrassed saying this right now, but 1.5.
Okay, no, that's good. Fresh perspective.
Almost a virgin.
I know. I just had my cherry popped again today. So. But no, it was, I guess this was my brother's like favorite movie. And I remember watching the last half of it. So I never saw the first half of it until today. So
now, have you ever seen the sequels?
No, I didn't know that there was more to it. So.
Okay. But cool. This is a good perspective.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, John?
Yeah. You'll also get that from me too. This is my third time watching it. I watched it. It's not that I'm not a huge fan of it. And the more that I watch it now, I'm probably going to watch it more. But it wasn't a film that I had discovered young, like Rebecca had, and probably sure Julianne having seen the sequels first and everything. I never even seen the sequels either. And that's not because I didn't want to after I watched the first one. It's just, I didn't get a chance to yet, you know?
So Julianne and I are the sleepaway camp whores of this
yes.
group.
Yes.
our body count's kind of high.
You yep. guys are the counselors.
Yes, they are the counselors. Which brings me up to my biggest question after rewatching this movie is, like, I couldn't really tell necessarily who the counselors were that much, you know? Like, how many of them were the counselors, how many of them were the kids?
We can tell you then.
Yeah. So I'm going to guess that Meg was a counselor.
Was a counselor, yes. But Judy was not. But, see, this is one of the things that camp movies are always notorious for is, if you think about it, like, the people who are counselors probably were just campers the year or two before. There's such mm-hmm. a fine line between the older campers and the younger counselors. So, yeah, it's a little hard to tell. But, yes, Meg was a counselor, and Judy was not. Those are the two main ones, I think, that nobody really knows.
Yeah. And let's see. Who else, like, I want to say who else might have been. Was Mike a counselor?
Boy in the very tight, very.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! Those shorts. Yeah.
he was the one that was making out with Judy or whatever.
At one point Paul was. He was a kid, a camper, right. A camper.
Yeah.
They don't focus on the counselors very much. Obviously, Mel is the owner. Meg, and then the other girl in the bunk with her who has no, like, role whatsoever, they're the counselors. And then we had the guy with the really short shorts and then Nuthuckers. He's the counselor. But most of them are campers.
Are you saying the girl that actually came at the volleyball scene and said, basically told Meg to leave her alone?
Yeah.
Or whatever? Yeah, I think it was Meg. Yeah, she told Meg to leave her alone. I don't even know what other than the fact that I watched it again and I just watched it. I didn't like rewatch it like right after or anything. So I'm a little confused too. Was she staring at Meg in the very beginning or was she staring at Judy in the very beginning of the movie? And
she just kind of stares.
Well, there was one person who got freaked out about it.
Well, Judy got freaked out.
Yeah.
But she just kind of stares, and that's how she was directed to be, was just kind of like a deer in headlights.
Did a great job at that. I almost thought she, the first time I saw it, I almost thought she wasn't going to talk at all.
Oh, well, she barely says anything. Burt Reynolds!
It would have been great if she didn't talk, because then she could count into the Jason and the Michael Myers and be the silent killer, you know? The fact that she...
I think that was the humanity of her, though, just that little tiny blip of her coming out of her shell. It kind of gave her that humanity before the downfall of everything.
Right. Because I just watched it with the commentary, which I've seen it with the commentary before. I did the math. It's from like 2000, so it's really dated. They're talking about like movies that are like, you know, they're like, oh, did you see The Sopranos last night? Like, what? You know? But that is one thing that she said, that in the scene at the whatever you want to call it, like their social hall or whatever, where she first meets Paul and he's talking to her, that was how he directed her. The director, he said, just kind of stare like a deer in headlights for a while and then start to slowly show some interest. You know, you can see her kind of tilt her head. She's like, oh, here it comes, tilting my head, blinking my eyes. I've got a little smile, you know. So it was that whole thing of, yeah, she's totally in her shell, but she kind of comes out of it a little bit, and mm-hmm. and then it comes to bite her and everybody else in the ass.
All right. Well, that's good. The other, let's see, I'm trying to think of all the things that I was thinking about while I was watching it, trying to, I didn't write any notes. I should have wrote notes down. I also want to know now that I know Joe hadn't seen it as much, you know, like I haven't, let me hear some more stuff. Like, what was your take on it? Since this is your, like, yeah. you know, basically it's your first time watching it all the way through.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I don't know, because some people didn't die. You just kind of assume that they died, or you kind of hope that they died.
Yeah.
I liked the way that they wrote in, you know, the way they died made sense. It wasn't like, oh my God, like that just doesn't make any sense at all. I can't see that happening in real life. Like, except for the one where they were under the canoe and she like went to go drown him. It was kind of like he didn't really fight for it.
Yeah.
There's a couple of those I felt they could have fought for it a little harder or showed some kind of fight in them. But other than that, like, I can see that stuff happening. So I really liked that part of the movie. Other than the acting, I like the acting. I like her cousin going, ah, Napoleon swing every time. He's like, hold me back. And then he'd go to go away. He's like, nobody's even holding him anymore at this point. He's like,
Ricky's you know. Such a stud.
What was that, Julianne? What was that?
I said with his little shirt and everything, like he was wearing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, one of the things that Joe was talking about is the deaths. And if you think about it, too, if you go back, it is kind of clever that all the things do seem like something that an adolescent could do. There wasn't the drowning was maybe a little, especially if she doesn't like the water. Like, maybe that's, yeah, a little bit unbelievable. But, I mean, everything is really believable. And I did not notice this until I watched it this time. And they mentioned on the commentary, Meg's death is the only one that has blood. That's the only time there's blood in the entire movie.
That's
wow.
right, in the shower. Because you yeah. see it coming back.
Yeah, because everything Locked else off. Is like the bees on the face or the drowning or the water the on the face. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't even realize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm glad that, like, because for a while they put the red herring as Ricky, obviously.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You don't know. You think that Ricky is probably the one trying to get vengeance on his cousin and everything. But, you know, then you find out later on it was Angela who was the killer, which goes to, like, this was a very, and I guess we could talk about the ending, you know. I'm sure Joe. I'm wondering about this because you had seen the ending basically before you saw the whole movie.
You're like, I gotta see the rest. I gotta go rewind.
The ending. What happened to get us to
that point?
Yeah.
So that is something I've always wanted to ask somebody. Okay, so I watched, and Julie, now we both know, I watched part two before I ever watched part one. So I knew that Angela was the shy 12-year-old girl, blah, 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 blah. So even the first time, not that I remember the first time, but even the first time I watched this, the ending was not a shock to me at all. I knew it was Angela from the beginning. So for Jonathan and Joe, did you see that coming? Like, it's kind of hard to figure out the red herrings when you already know who the killer is. But, well, like,
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
But did you have, like, a strong sense of, oh, it's Mel. I know it's the camp owner or whatever.
Well, with me, I had seen the last half the first time I'd seen it. So it was already kind of, I don't know, in the middle of everything. So I didn't really get like the entire movie to sit there and guess or try to guess.
Right.
It was already starting to like come out at that point when I had seen the movie. It was like maybe, I don't really remember exactly what part it was in the movie. It was getting pretty close to the end, so I didn't really have a whole lot of time to try to play the game with everyone else and try to figure out who shot Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
But so when I saw it, it just kind of hit all that, and I was just like, what the fuck did I just watch? Like, what is this?
Definitely.
Okay, so John, you were totally a virgin from beginning to end. So what did you think? Or did you already know just because of the circles you're in?
Yeah. I mean, that was the problem, is that like, I had known of Felissa because I watched a movie called Zombiegeddon, back in, you know, early 2000s. And so I was not aware of Sleepaway Camp when I was younger. Like, this just was not a movie. I don't even think I saw it in the movie store or whatever, or if I did, I just completely went over it. So when I saw, you know, years later, people already talked about Angela and obviously the ending, the twist ending of her actually being Peter, you know, and stuff. So, or, I mean, I you know what I mean? Like, all that was already mm-hmm. kind of told to me and enough that like, I was already aware that this was coming.
Yeah.
You know? And so I just was a little bit, you know, oh man, this is cool and everything, and seeing all the pictures that Felissa takes where she does the face, yeah, you know, and everything. Yeah, exactly.
I've got one right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing.
I can't even do it.
Yeah. She can do it. She can do it.
Like, yeah.
Still do it. Yes. And it's amazing. And I love that. Yeah. On cue, if somebody asked her to do it, she'll just pose like that. And I think that's the cutest thing in a world, in a way, but also kind of scary. But she's wonderful. And, you know, so seeing that, it didn't really bother me, already kind of knowing the ending. It's kind of like, as was said, if you watch Sleepaway Camp 2, you kind of already know who the killer was.
Yeah.
When that kind of is going to happen when you make it, when there's sequels made and the people haven't watched the first movie, you know, aside from Friday the 13th part 1, where if you watch part 2, you wouldn't know that the killer was the mom in the beginning, maybe.
Yeah, you would.
Would you?
Her head is... She has like a... He has a shrine with her head.
I know, but that doesn't necessarily... Okay.
They talk do. About the whole thing, and they do the whole like flashback with Alice.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
So any sequel that you have, probably. You know, I was trying to use that.
And that is one, like, that's one that I compare this to. I wish I could just like Men in Black, like flash my mind just one time and just watch it, like not knowing the end, and just see like, did they do a good job with the red herrings? Like, you know, all that stuff. Would you see it coming? Because it's so hard to go back when you like have seen it and you know.
Yeah. So like, okay. So that brings, so when you, the first time that you watched it, Joe, having not seen the sequels and everything, you watched the ending or whatever, but you're still seeing sort of the violence happening, all this other stuff happening throughout it. And you were saying, what the fuck? Do you still think they did a great job just showing, like, confusing you? Because they did have that scene with Mel yelling at Ricky and basically trying to kill Ricky at one point. Yeah. So you probably could have thought that
lawsuit.
Ricky was, you know, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because he was like super protective over her, trying to like defend her when someone wronged her. And the perspective that they'd give you when something was going to happen was low, like a little kid, like, especially in the kitchen when they had the chair there, they show from the perspective of the killer, whoever it may be at the time, and their height level and all that, not like an adult. So yeah, I can see them putting it on, like making it seem like it was the little kid. And I think they did do a good job at it.
Yeah, definitely.
Too. And I mean, like, even now that you watch, like, you know, you can watch it in like freaking Blu-ray and everything else. So, you know, if you think about it, like, there's so many movies that almost get ruined by higher definition, you know, like, because that's not the way they were meant to be seen. But this is definitely one, because if you watch this on VHS, in the Judy scene, when there's a silhouette at the door and she's just like, who is it? Whatever. You can now see it is clearly Jonathan Tiersten, like in a wig. It is Ricky. But if you were watching that on VHS, you wouldn't have known. It was very like blurred. So.
So wait.
Yeah, it looks comical now. Oh, like, it looks horrible because the wig was horrible and you could see all the light coming through it. Like, but whereas when you watched it like in low def, it was just like very much just a silhouette that it could be anybody.
Okay. So are you saying they tried to fool the audience throughout the whole thing of making it seem like it could be Ricky when it wasn't Ricky the whole time?
Yeah, and there's still debate. They're not quite sure, but they're pretty sure they used his hands to pull away the chair with the cook.
Yeah. Well, it did seem like a manly hand and not, you know, at times that's another thing that like, they did that with Friday the 13th.
13th, exactly. You know, but because, did you ever think that when you were watching that on VHS? No. Never noticed the hair on the knuckles.
No, that's
true.
I mean,
it's just a difference with like the way we watch things now.
Yeah, you can definitely tell more now. And so,
I don't like it.
I don't either. I mean, I like to see some of the detail. To see how they did some things, but I don't like it for just as a movie watcher. I would much rather watch some of that stuff like Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm going to watch that low definition, hands down, way before I ever watched that in high definition. There are just certain movies that lend themselves to that.
So you still have a VCR?
I do not. I have a CD player. Yeah, and usually when I watch the first four Fridays, I will watch it on CD.
CED
was a precursor to Laserdisc.
Right.
It comes in a very large, it's record inside. I mean, that's what it is. It's got a stylus inside of the player. It plays the record. It was, you know, higher quality than VHS, but yeah.
Well, I'm just asking, is that going to look just like VHS?
As far as quality goes, it was supposed to be higher quality, and I'm sure it was at the time.
And it doesn't eat the tape.
So right, yeah, tape. And the record is in this caddy thing, and you put the caddy inside the machine, and it pops the plastic back out. So, like, the record never sees the light of day, so it doesn't get scratched. Now, it doesn't mean it doesn't still jump a little bit, but it's unlike like a tape being eaten. It was a little superior in that it was protecting the format.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that kind of stuff. I love looking back at all the different formats that have tried to come and tried to be the next big thing. You know, Laserdisc took over. Then after that, we got DVD. Then we got Blu-ray. And who knows what's going to come.
Who knows next. What's next? Yeah. I mean.
Well, weirdly.
They're going to come to your house and reenact it. I hope.
I'm waiting for, yeah, like the hologram. Like you put your phone down and you hit a button and it just plays right in front of you.
Yeah. In 3D, you know, where it's all like up in your face and everything.
But you don't have to wear any glasses.
I'm waiting for the time that we can go into sleepaway camp and we can be there. Like they can transport us into the movie. Like you guys ever seen Final Girls where they're like in the movie?
Yes. Oh, I love that movie.
It's not an 80s movie, but it definitely has it's a very big throwback to 80s movies and a wonderful film. But actually got to see the director out here in California. I was at a testing for one of his next movies and stuff. So I looked him up later. I was like, oh my God, that's the director of like, oh man, I went crazy. I was
it
like,
it makes
oh.
me want to cry every time I hear Betty Davis eyes after I watch.
Oh that. No.
Yeah. That was a so great
lovely.
Scene, but anyway, we're going to go back to Sleepaway Camp. So we're going to go back there right now and we're going to talk about how, how amazing has his held up. Like this film, I think they've talked about doing like a remake or something like that, and I don't think it needs a remake at all, like because like I feel like anything they would do would undermine everything they did for the actual film itself, because it still holds up today. Like new audience members who may not be familiar with Angela and Ricky and all and everything would be like, holy crap, this is still a really good movie.
It would change it so much just because of the time period, just because of like Aunt Martha. Like if you took out Aunt Martha, you'd have a pretty solid whodunit, but then you throw her in and it becomes this like campy ass movie. I mean, you know, you've got the crazy aunt in her yellow suit, you know? you know, you can't recreate those kinds of things. They did do a fourth one called Return to Sleepaway Camp that did bring back Ricky and Angela. It was not good. And that was 2008, which is maybe what you were thinking of. But this movie, I think, kind of stands on its own. I will say this, not to sound like the actually girl. So I met Felissa at one of her first cons, like 10 years ago or something. I think it was Horror Hound in Indy. And she was at this little table, you know, it's not like it is now. Like, everybody knows Felissa. And she was at this little table. I couldn't even find a Sleepaway Camp shirt online. I made my own. You know how you get those like iron-on transfers that you print with the inkjet printer? I printed like the cover and put it on. She was like, oh my God, you're so cute. Ah. You know, and like she was in that, still in that thing like, oh my God, you know who I am? You watched that movie? Like, you like that movie? You're my fan? Like, still in that sort of phase. And that movie still, like, really at that point in time, I mean, even 10 years ago, just didn't have traction. I think now that she's become such a darling of the con circuit that that's what's brought this movie back and the whole franchise back to the public eye, because nobody was talking about it before, like, you know, in 2010, no one.
Right. Yeah. That's crazy.
I don't know. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Isn't that the American dream? You do something when you're 12 years old, and then like 20 years later, like, that's how you make your living.
Yeah, I agree. So yeah, Joe, like, were you a big fan of Felissa for a while, or did you like, you know, did you know much about her before watching this movie?
I did. I have a lot of friends in Fresno that do a lot of horror film, and they're friends with her. She does a lot of work with them. So I became familiar with her through them.
Yeah.
So.
And Julianne, you actually, you work with a horror convention. So you probably worked with Felissa a lot, you know, and had her on your shows a lot, right?
The first time I met her was one of the first Days of the Dead, and I knew who she was, and she was just immediately like that person who wanted to go hang out at the bar. So immediately became friends, and we just stayed in touch. And then I would just see her over and over, because she was, like Rebecca was saying, just so gracious with the fans, just wanting to, like, she's one of those people that one of the reasons why everybody keeps requesting her, even though, you know, most likely she'll be there because she loves it, but they want her there because she's so hands-on, and she's so interactive, and she's so just grateful for, you know, the beauty of human interaction. And of course, she does really honor the fact that people care about her work. But I remember the first time I met her, it was exactly like Rebecca was saying, where it wasn't like as, you know, huge, you know, kind of spotlight on her. But now it's, again, I think she's doing more and more and more films also, because of that love for her publicly, in her getting out there and meeting, you know, other directors and people in the industry at conventions or on other sets and stuff. But she herself is like a universe within, you know, a person. So I think that's what makes her special and what adds to this movie, where I'm cool with remakes and reimagining, especially if there's something that you can add to it. I just can't think of how you could possibly add something or even redo this in any way whatsoever and have it be anything worth watching.
Definitely. I'm a big fan of remakes and reboots, as long as they do it in the, you know, as you said, add something, but also if they are like, you know, they give love to the material, you know, and everything. That was one of the things I actually liked about the Friday the 13th reboot, was I actually did think the people who wrote it actually did love the original movie. I personally, as a writer, would not have done the stuff that they did. A lot of it was cliche, but I feel like I understand why they did it. And so I don't think I would want a Sleepaway Camp remake if they ever wanted to do that, they ever tried to even do it, you know. But more sequels would be pretty cool if they could figure out how to do like where it worked, you know, or whatever. Because as was said, I've heard the fourth one was not the greatest, but there are so many ways to make a better sequel to this movie, you know. I'm sure
I'd be down for them doing more sequels, and they could get some really cool people to do that, even if it was like a love letter film and make another one and put it in there. I feel with the way that the sequels are, which, you know, you guys haven't seen, but Rebecca knows, it would fit right in to just do something like that, a modernized love letter, you know, just something to do with it ties in, but they could totally do that.
So just so you guys know, two and three are great movies. Sleepaway Camp Part 2 and Friday the 13th Part 2 are what I say are my favorite movies of all time. So that just tells you. But when they switch to Part 2, it's a different director, a different Angela. It's Pamela Springsteen, Bruce's sister. And it is almost a horror parody, but with lots and lots of gore. It is just a completely different tone. To me, it's a completely different Sleepaway Camp. I mean, it has the name, has the story, you know, and it's many, many years later. She's an adult. And it's like you could watch the two and never make the connection. They're like great in their own right. And two and three kind of have the same, you know, they have the same character arc or whatever. But yeah, you could totally, like the way that they switched that up between one and two, it could totally be switched up now. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, the sequels are campy and they're about the depth. And they're about the cheesy one-liners.
That kind of thing. Angela developed a very dry sense of humor while she was in the mental institution, people. Like a really awesome, awesome. And she learned how to play guitar.
Oh, the Happy Camper song.
Yes.
So she's not the shy little girl she was in the first movie anymore. She's nope. Grown out of the shell.
Yeah.
Killing has made her, you know, a more in-depth person, you know, right? Like less shops. You know,
she's moral. Like she's on like moral rampage. A lot of the killings that she does is mm-hmm. about morality, and she just sees like people with dirty behavior, and she wants to correct it. Sort of like just in a way trying to do the right thing. She thinks she's doing the right thing, but it's just really messy.
She's yeah, messy, well, definitely.
Well, what I liked a lot about the original Sleepaway Camp was that it had the children and the campers, you know, was mm-hmm. was the main thing, as opposed to Friday the 13th, which concentrated on the counselors getting ready for the, you know, and that seemed to be all three freaking first movies of Friday the 13th is the counselors are getting ready to open Camp Blood back up, where Camp Arawak was actually... you know, already open, and it was, you know, it was a regular go camp. And I enjoyed that because it almost seemed a little fresh. Having watched Mad Men, that's a completely different
thing.
Oh my God, why? I was like, what?
After watching that recently for the first time, I started realizing like, that Sleepaway Camp is a far superior movie than a lot of the camp movies.
Yeah,
you know?
The Burning is another one that takes place with the actual campers. And actually, I think Madman, I mean, there are campers there. They're just getting ready to go home. But, like, I don't think they could afford enough kids, so they ended up with fewer kids than counselors.
The ones nobody picked up, like, their dad was, like, yeah. Late or mom forgot.
They're like, we'll write that into the story. We only got 6 12-year-olds. Come on, let's film this thing.
And they're all, like, somebody's sister or brother, like, neighbor's kid.
Yeah. And then, was it American Horror Story actually did a camp one, which I know a lot of people are not a fan or whatever, but what I saw, I only saw the first episode, but kind of what I saw from it was that it definitely had that feel of the 80s camp.
It takes about 4 or 5 big turns, and that's not a spoiler. If you watch American Horror Story, you know that.
Yeah.
Every season does that, but yeah, it did start with that, like, we have kids at a camp, and we're not going to like neuter it to where, then that's exactly it. It's like the whole, we can't show kids getting killed on camera, so let's just take them out of the equation, which kind of does neuter the movie when you're talking about a summer camp for kids. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that was the thing. Well, go ahead, Julianne.
Sorry. No, that's one thing that I really liked about Friday 13th Part 6 is they did have more involvement with the little kids and, you know, peeping in the windows and hiding under beds, and they did have a little more involvement.
So what did you want to be when you grow
up? Hey, that one. And the mouse, like the mouse on the wheel.
Yeah.
That's interesting because, wait, because was it the Nintendo game for Friday the 13th came out and it had the camp counselors and the kids or something, right?
I don't think it had kids.
Did not have it? I thought you had to save the kids.
Well, you're supposed to save the kids, but I don't think you ever have the kids there.
Right, but you're supposed to save the kids. So I'm wondering if that was actually based on Friday the 13th Part 6.
No, because it was way earlier than that.
Was it?
I'll have to look that up, but we're still talking about Sleepaway
Camp. Yeah, we're going camping everywhere now.
That's right. This is just our summer camp episode now.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. All right, so let's talk more about, I guess, what do you guys expect now from summer camp movies? Like, has this movie kind of, in a way, shaped other summer camp movies to become something different? Do you guys think, or do you guys like what, you know, like it as its own movie, I guess? I don't know.
I'd like to see more traumatized children. I feel like that came out wrong.
No.
Go back to the camp.
This is a safe place, Julie. Safe place.
I'd like to see it go back to the actual campers. Maybe they're like the older campers that are in charge, you know, like they have like the ones are about to graduate, and maybe, like you're saying, go into potentially be counselors, but it's their last year, you know, so you could still do, like, the older teens instead of, you know, like, the younger kids or whatever, but I'd like to see it more from their perspective, because we do see a lot of counselors.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say about Sleepaway Camp, too, one thing you got to give mad props to, spoiler alert, is that they kill, like, the younger ones.
Yeah. Right.
There are several younger ones that get killed. So not on screen, because that wasn't allowed back then. I don't know if it's allowed now, but you know, but they do get pretty brutal deaths.
Well, yeah, like the bee death scene, you know, or whatever. That was pretty brutal, but you don't actually see him there, you know. You only see the great death,
but that's just silly.
What, that they didn't actually show the bees attacking him?
No, that there was just a dowel rod in this, like, flimsy. Oh, yeah. Like, I think a toddler could have broken that door down or climbed under it. But anyway. Yeah.
Oh, true. Yeah.
I guess you get freaked out. He's allergic, whatever. You know, he's still reading his comic book. But, like, I mean, isn't that your, like, natural, like, inclination? If something wrong is going in the stall, you just climb under the door.
Or climb out the window or something. I don't know. If there was a window that could, like...
Yeah, but the bees were out the window. That was the problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're right. He could have probably busted through. He did bust through at the end. He fell through it, you know,
Very end, but it's, you know, like...
But that was pretty cool because, yeah, most of the deaths were off screen. You don't really see the deaths. So, as was said earlier, so I think that's kind of a cool thing where it still worked. Like, you saw the aftermath and you saw the gore of it, which I thought was amazing. My favorite one being the drowning and everything, where the kids... I forgot what the kid's name was, but you see him down and you see like a snake coming out of his mouth. Mm-hmm. And I was just that is just really fucking cool. Like, I obviously that was like a fake head, I would hope, because I would never have, you could not pay me enough to like have an actual snake come through my mouth. You know?
That's where this is a more of a whodunit. is because they, you know, I mean, I'm sure it was all budgetary. I'm sure it wasn't stylistic, but I'm going to say that it was that like most of them were cut away. And then you just see, like, you know, something's going to happen, cut away. And then you see a dead body because we can't see who's doing it. And it isn't a giallo. We can't just see that black gloved hand and not know who it is. So they're really good about like hiding the identity of the killer with their quick cuts.
Exactly. Who's your guys' favorite death scene? You know, let's go with Joe. Who's your favorite?
Well, I don't know if he died for sure, but I'm kind of hoping that he did. And it would be the shitty pervy cook at the camp that gets her all caught up in the walk-in. I'm like, yes, yes, die, yes, please.
See, I don't think he died. That's the thing. Like, because he was so burned and they put him in the ambulance and the one guy says, I wouldn't want to be that guy. Like, you know, I mean, he's got to be in so much pain. That's got to be the worst thing ever. And I think that's worse than death. Like, he's going to be, true. They could make a whole other spinoff movie about him when he gets out of the hospital.
Yeah, being a killer.
But the doctor also said, I don't have enough drugs to mask the pain of that. So I kind of hope that he went to the hospital and died of shock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. several days of just being in agony. Yeah,
I like where you're going with this.
What about you, Julianne? What was your favorite death?
I'm sorry to do this, but I have to jump to part two because it's my favorite death out of any movie. And you guys don't know this, but there's an outhouse scene where someone dies in an outhouse really, really bad. It's the best out of any movie I've ever seen. So I know you're asked about part one, but I have to give props to that because it's my answer for any movie.
Okay. So you can give props to that, but out of this one, what is your favorite?
I did like the bees. I thought that was scary. I thought it was something that could really happen very naturally. I mean, you could catch, if you're on the toilet, I mean, you're obviously not paying attention. It had flaws, but honestly, I did think that being attacked by bees, whether he died or not from it, I just feel like that probably would be one of the worst deaths you could imagine, just because it's just like, it's not quick. It's just agonizing over and over and over again for however long you're able to withstand it.
Definitely. What about you, Rebecca?
Now, I will say, Julie, I will send you a link. I did a tribute to Allie. And I actually... yes.
I love it.
And I actually recreated that... Not recreated that scene, but I actually did something cool to that scene. So I'll send you the link.
Please.
Allie's my hero. I thought she was so cool. I loved her. Anyway, back to part one. You know, I think like the one that stuck with me most when I was younger was Meg, because of that whole idea that she's like in the shower. It's very brightly lit. You know, and it doesn't seem like there's any kind of trouble brewing. And it comes through the back of the shower and just that whole like down the shower with the knife. And there's that, I like shower deaths too, because there's like a vulnerability to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's always catches people off guard. No one expects it. And she clearly didn't. And I really did not want her to have that date with Mel. So it worked out pretty well.
I will actually say yes, that's my favorite too. So I will agree. And mainly because the vulnerability thing was a big thing with me. Like I don't, ever since I think the first shower scene movie other than I think Psycho I watched years later, but the first one I ever saw was Arachnophobia. And yeah, so you can like shower scenes are always kind of like freak me out because like I always try to lock the door of my, you know, thing. So
now we know how to scare Jonathan. Yay!
Oh Lord. What have I gotten myself into here?
A lot.
Never admit your vulnerabilities. Never.
But see that's the thing.
We're always taking notes too. No.
We're all taking notes for me for my death scenes. You know, but see that's the thing. That's like, you know, kind of what scares me a little bit. Also I did like the scene with the kid drowning, like that stuff, you know, in the water. So I thought that was pretty cool. So all in all, I thought it was a you know, it was a neat little, like, period. Like, all those deaths, there wasn't that many deaths to be, you know, like, there wasn't a whole lot of people dying. But it still made me wonder why the guy would keep the camp open after, like, two or three.
Money. Like,
after that, I know, but I would, and that was his reason. That's
the
what he
answer
said.
To everything, money I know, and but those, like, plaid golf pants, you know?
He even said, like, the parents wouldn't allow him to, like, wouldn't bring him anybody else because of this. I thought that was, like, really, like, so you're still allowing people to, like, die, you know? Like, also, him knowing that there was a killer on the loose, and then he comes in and hears that Meg was in a shower. I was surprised he didn't rush as quickly as he could to, you know, see if he could possibly save her or something, you know, yeah, or whatever.
He didn't care. He cared, but he didn't care, you know? Right.
About that date.
Yeah. Now, one thing we didn't talk about at all was the fact that at the very end, so they're like, okay, there's a killer. All the counselors are like, okay, we're going to split up. We're going to find everybody who's still alive, blah, blah, blah. And Nuthugger Shorts and nice little counselor girl go to the, they go to the beach and, like, there's Angela and they're like, Angela, Angela, hey, are you okay? She's humming that stupid tune, the same tune that Meg hummed. As she stands up, she's got a camper's head in her hands, bloody decapitated head, and drops it. And they are like, oh my God, she's a boy. not, oh my God, she's the killer. Oh my God, that's Paul's head in her hands.
That like, is so true.
Right.
Like, that's the thing that they really, like, decided to focus on. And I'm like,
I think that's, but that's what everybody focused on, really, like, period, well, yeah, after the movie. So many people have said, some people have said that they were traumatized by this movie, apparently, or something. And I was like, I mean, if you can't take it nowadays, you know, then I don't know what's wrong with you. But, like back then, I guarantee you, it was something that people were shocked. And
yeah, it was not something that was talked about or shown a whole lot. And then going back to the whole subplot of, like, when they keep going back to, like, Peter and Angela, like, the real Angela, you know, and, like, on the bed pointing at each other while, like, their dad is, like, sleeping with a guy. And, you know, they just did all these weird imagery things of, like, gender blurring and whatnot, that make no sense, really. Like, you can't analyze any of it, but you can just kind of guess they were trying to, like, tell you there was always, like, something there that was, like, you know, blurry. But, like, and also the aunt's mental illness. Right. Let's not forget that one. Because this is another thing, too. I've seen some people say this is, like, transphobic and everything else. And it's like, well, okay, first of all, no. But secondly, our character did not choose her fate. I mean, Peter did not choose to be Angela. This was a four-year-old who was totally, you know, brainwashed and changed, like, by a psychotic fucking aunt who happened to be a physician, which is really, like, comforting.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey. I tied this ribbon around my finger and I don't remember why. Like, hey, if there's a remake, I want to be Aunt Martha.
Oh my God.
Yes. But I mean, but there's not, you know, there's so much, like, mental trauma that's been put onto this kid.
Well, also, I remember in the beginning of the movie, she talked about how they had their physicals and she had to, like, fake the physicals in order.
Well, I mean, that's basically what she was doing, but right, she didn't say that.
Right. Well, no. She didn't say it flat out, but she did say something where she reminded her son, reminded Ricky not to talk about it. Don't talk about this.
Don't tell him.
Yeah, basically. And so I'm wondering, did Ricky must have known that Peter was Angela, right?
So that was one of the things in the commentary.
Okay.
Ooh, okay.
Okay, so even Felissa said, because it was Felissa, the director, and then somebody else. I don't even remember who. It doesn't matter. But in that point, she was like, did Ricky know? And the director was like, I don't know. Did Ricky know? She's like, I don't know. Did Ricky know? So clearly that wasn't anything that they thought of. Because they went back and forth. Like, I mean, you could argue either point, but the filmmakers did not have they did not have that thought of did Ricky know or not. And why would Ricky know? I mean, Ricky
maybe
was the same age.
So young.
Yeah, because he would have been like 4 or 2. And he was at his dad's. Remember, he was at his dad's. And so he comes back and hears Angela, you know, after the, you know, the accident. And you had to think too, like, I mean, the kid was wrapped with like, you know, head bandages all the way around. There had to be like some traumatic brain injury going with all that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't think that Angela would have ever let on, or Angela would even like known. And why would her cousin, like, you know, why would he know?
Right. It's interesting to say that, because earlier when we were talking, you know, you pointed out that, you know, they used basically like Ricky's hand to pull the chair in the kitchen. And they were leading on that it could be Ricky, and that you can clearly see that it was Ricky in the wig. I don't know. That kind of feels like maybe they were both supposed to be killers at some point, maybe. Like, you know how Norman Bates dressed like his mother. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Probably not. I'm just kind of getting all that right now.
That was another thing they said, too. They were like, well, why couldn't it be more than one killer? Blah, blah, blah. And, like, you know, we always make that assumption when we watch a movie that it's a killer. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, why couldn't it be more?
These kids come from such a whacked out background, and just mm-hmm. kids in general, they don't think the same way that adults, where everything's so black and white. So it could have just been normal for them, and maybe they did know, maybe they didn't, but it was just kind of like their interactions or how they knew each other and how they protected each other. It could be something where they were both interconnected and both going through so much trauma that it was just kind of like their way of life. So he could have been in on this, he could have been part of it, or he could have known more, but it just wasn't like a big thing because that was their environment.
I mean, I feel like in the end, when it comes down to it, like, I mean, you can argue whatever you want, but I think when it comes down to it, I think the idea was that Ricky came home when he was 4 or 5, his cousin was there, and she was messed up massively from this accident and was never the same, didn't talk presumably very much, and he grew up to be very protective of her. And so when she goes to the summer camp, he's like ultra protective, and I don't feel like he did. I feel like he was so protective just because it's like, hey, my cousin went through a bunch of shit. Mm-hmm. Don't mess with her. I think that's more what it was.
That might have been the case. I don't know. I'm wondering if there were two, like, there could be this thing where, and even though the director has said, like, he doesn't know if Ricky knows or whatever and things like that, maybe he doesn't even know really, like, who technically the killer is. Maybe it wasn't just Angela. Maybe Angela and Ricky, because it kind of leaves you up to that imagination of, like, maybe they both were in on it and everything, but there's never any, like, final say of like, okay, Angela is the killer, because as was said, what all they said at the end wasn't Angela's the killer, it's Angela is a boy, you know. Mm-hmm. Right? So, you know, kind of leaves you up to thinking maybe there's more than one killer.
I need to rewatch that fourth one. I know it's so bad. I don't even know that I finished it the first time. I really don't. It does have both of them in it. I don't even remember, like, if it even addresses any of that stuff. And I think most people don't consider that canon because it was so bad. But there may be some things in there that they did try to tie up. I'm sure they did. But, I mean, it was, you know, 25 years later.
It would be cool if they could segue that into another movie and maybe explore that and something else to do with him or something, how it affected him. And maybe he, you know, did something or had something going on where he could tell us more of the story.
Exactly.
Maybe with anything more.
I would love that. I would love another Sleepaway Camp movie, Sleepaway Camp, I guess 5, and have it be something to do with the original movie completely, but make it pretty good, you know, like if it could, you know, I mean, it's tough these days because you know, it's hard to like look back at these films and see something that, you know, like, and bring it back to the original, you know? So for them to do it, it would be nice to kind of have something where, and I'm sure Felissa would jump on playing Angela one more time, you know?
Oh, I guarantee it.
Yeah, she loves it. So if somebody were to do that, that'd be awesome. But unfortunately,
that would be so cool to have them, because they could do it direct. Not say that the sequels didn't exist, but do something to tie into the first one, so the newer movie could just tie directly in with continuation from just the first.
Yeah,
any of the other ones.
We see so many franchises just ignore a movie. Just be like, okay, we're gonna reboot, okay, start over, okay, we're gonna rewind one or two sequels and we're just gonna start from there. I mean,
well, a lot of that has to do with like rights, I think, something too, like you look at like Chucky's having its own like little reboots and a little, you know, things, but like that's rights issues, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
So Halloween, I don't think I had that problem because the rights were always with like Dimension originally, and now with, you know, I forgot who they're with now, but Blumhouse, you know, I think. Yeah. So you know, they're doing their own things with Halloween, which is kind of cool, you know, whatever. I'll watch them because I'm a fan of the originals. And that's, I think that's going to be the thing. If somebody makes a sequel to Sleepaway Camp, and brings back the original cast members and ties it to like makes a part two, you know, without it being actually a part two, you know, you know, tied into the original, that would be pretty cool. Cause then you can watch a whole like 6, 7, 8, you know, or 5, 6, 7 be about, you know, that. And then, you know, or stuff like that, you know, like, I just don't know who owns the rights to Sleepaway Camp right now. Like, I don't know if that's,
I think it's probably like the director. I mean, because he's the one who did like Robert, I can't pronounce his last name. Anyway, he's the one that did that fourth one. So probably he does own the rights. This wasn't a huge movie. And like I said, it didn't even become a cult classic till like later.
Right.
So I don't think it was one of those things where anybody was ever really fighting over it, like some of these other movies that we see.
Right. Which kind of sucks. I feel like it should have gotten a lot more, you know, credit, you know.
But it is now. And I think that that's good. That's good enough.
Right. You know? Yeah, no, it definitely gets more credit now than it did like maybe 10 years ago when you were talking to, you know, you were meeting with Felissa, you know, and everything. So I think that's really cool. Well, it's about time to wrap up. We didn't do Julianne and Joe, we didn't do a rating, or did we the last time?
I don't remember.
I think we might have. That's the thing.
We did a rating.
And how did we do it? Like 1 through 5 or 1 through 10?
I think it was.
Oh my God. 5. I should have re-listened to the last one before we did this.
Rating scale to be determined, everybody.
Let's let Rebecca, because she's here. Like, let Rebecca, like, let's do it.
Well, we'll do 1 through 5. Just do 1 through 5. Then I'm good with that, because this is a 5+ to me.
Oh, okay. This is a 5?
Perfection, yes.
Okay, how about you, Julianne? What would you give it?
I would say the same. I think it's a perfect movie, especially for the time, and there's nothing that I could see improving upon whatsoever at all.
All right. What about you, Joe?
I'm going to have to agree with these two beautiful ladies. I didn't see anything wrong with the film at all. I enjoyed everything that I saw in it. And it would be something that I would definitely watch again.
And I would agree as well. This is definitely a 5. The thing with this movie, though, like even the campiness with the aunt, that worked very well. It still felt like the same tone of the movie. Didn't, like, sometimes movies do that where they take like a turn and they like have a different tone at some point or whatever. And this movie just didn't have that. It felt like the movie throughout. So I really enjoyed it.
I think this movie is what you would actually like classify as lightning in a bottle. Like, they couldn't do it again. And all of this, the silly things with, like, you know, the crazy aunt and the pervy cook and all the things that make it as charming as it is. If you tried to redo it, it would not work, but it works perfectly with what they did.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you ladies so much. Before we end, let's go through everybody and then find out what you guys have been up to lately. So Julianne, starting with you.
Well, I have a little bit of a plug that ties in with this. There was an anniversary release. I think it came through Australia with the distributor for Sleepaway Camp 2. And they added some wraparound footage, like in the beginning of the movie during the campfire tale. There's a campfire tale that TC, the main counselor, is talking about with this couple, Steve and Michelle, that are going to the graveyard, and the girl finds the body. And we shot that at the mausoleum where they shot one of the Phantasm movies out there.
Wow,
in,
nice.
I believe it's Culver City. And then the ending, there's, and I won't give that away, but it was more of what could have possibly happened to the main character, Renee Estevez, who's also related to Emilio. And then they also had extended gore, like original extended gore footage for some of the kills, and some commentary and stuff that was in that. And I know it was originally only released on VHS through the distributor, but I think that they might have made some either DVD or Blu-ray copies as well. And for the life of me, I wish I would have written it down, but I don't have the distributor's name in front of me, but if anyone is interested, look it up. It's called Sleepaway Camp 2 Redux, and I believe, I don't know if it was the 20-year anniversary, but it was an anniversary special sort of thing that they put together for that. And that about killed me, because that was like a dream come true, even if it was just, you know, limited release to have anything to do with those movies. So
that's awesome.
That's my little plug for people to look up.
There you go. What about you, Joe? What have you been up to?
Just my shows and conventions. It's a convention season right now, and everybody trying their best to do them the best that they can. My show Any Last Words and Girls Gorn Gin every week, and then next month I've got a couple of conventions. Hopefully they'll still be open to go to with all the craziness in the world. So I'll be at the Creepin' It Real Expo in Santa Ana, and then hopefully in Vegas for Shockfest Film Festival.
Nice. All right. What about you, Rebecca?
I've got too much stuff going on, but the one thing I will plug that will still be relevant when this airs is Carousel the Second. If you love the first movie, Carousel, about the sentient carousel unicorn Duke who goes on a murderous rampage. The sequel is going to deliver. We do have a Kickstarter going on right now, so if you follow me on Facebook, you will see lots of stuff about that movie.
All right. Well, there you go. Like lots, so much, you know, so much going on for everybody. And and Rebecca, we just did, Paul just did an interview with Steve Rosinski. So plugging that. So we're really excited about that. Carousel 1 was one of our favorite movies that we reviewed last year. So we're excited about.
Same. And it's a dream come true that I got cast in the sequel.
Yeah. So I'm excited about it, but thank you ladies. And thank you everybody for listening and checking this out. I'm not sure what next month's movie is going to be. See, I said next month, not next week. It's good. I got to get used to that now. But next month's movie is going to be yet. We'll all just kind of talk it out and decide what movies we should do and stuff like that. I don't want to be the only one suggesting movies and everything. But I think, everybody, what I would like is to make sure that everybody can watch the movies that we're doing so that we can promote them. So obviously, if you haven't seen Sleepaway Camp, I don't know why you just listened to us ramble and chat about it, but if you haven't seen it, you should go on, or if you have seen it and you still want to see it again, go on, what is it?
Shudder has it.
Shudder has it?
Yep, Shudder.
Shudder has it, but also IMDb TV has it. That's where I actually watched it. So that was kind of cool. And so you can watch it there. You could also buy the Scream Factory release that has the commentary tracks with Felissa Rose and Jonathan Tiersten, as well as commentary with the director. And I won't be able to say his name either, Robert H. yeah. That's how we're going to describe them. Sorry, Robert.
Yeah.
Melissa Rose and the webmaster, Jeff Hayes, who I do believe did stuff for Sleepaway Camp, like special features and other things. Mm-hmm. Any new interviews of the cast and crew, which probably aren't new anymore. Sleepaway Camp scrapbook and a short film, Judy, by Jeff Hayes.
Yes, and you can watch that on YouTube. It is because there's been so much controversy on, did Judy die or not?
Mm-hmm.
It's about what happened to Judy after the curling iron incident.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, there you go. So you guys can check that all out if you want to buy it. I think it's like $20 on Amazon or something. Well worth it. I love this movie, so I was very happy to have a copy of it myself and everything. So check that out. Yeah, if you want to watch in high definition where you see the silhouettes more, you know, a little bit more, or if you want to buy the VHSs of them or whatever, if you see them at any of the stores or anything, thrift stores. But there you go. I'm excited for next month. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm excited to bring you guys back. So let's make sure
should do Back to School. We should do a Back to School movie because it'll be August.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I guess
there are a lot of those.
I know. From the 80s? Oh, my goodness. Damn. All right. Yeah, well, we'll have to go and check that out and see which one we can find. But I want to thank you all once again and thank everybody. And everybody have a great, fantastic week. Bye.
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 Horror films.